Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. The first thing I think of when I think of investing in real estate is some sort of an income property, right? Like, I don't know, I'm going to have a rental somewhere. And then I think, I don't want to do that because I'm going to fix the faucets and deal with a tenant. But there are other ways to get into this game. And so we're going to talk about one that is, it's actually a private equity firm that offers a way for individuals to invest in real estate, but where they don't have to have a plumber's certificate and answer phone calls at 3 a.m. Greybrook is the name of the firm. Its CEO, Sasha Chouchouz, joins us now from Toronto to talk about how it works. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
I know a lot of people have a real interest in the real estate sector as an asset class in their overall investing mix. Like me, they don't want to have a traditional rental. You provide an alternative. How does that work?
Yeah, so you said it in your opening. We consume real estate in a different way. So most people do so, as you mentioned, by way of an income stream. They think of it like buying a finished product and you're extracting cash flow from that product. We're like the manufacturer of the product. So we invest in development, primarily residential development, and it's just a different way for investors to get exposure to a different part of the real estate continuum.
And is the bet about the capital appreciation in the real estate, or is it about the income stream, or is it both?
The way we do it, it's typically capital appreciation. So what investors are looking for is really a way to multiply their money over time. And if you think about it, it's a margin-based business. Development, not unlike, you know, the proverbial economic example of a widget. You know, there's a cost to acquire the raw materials, that in our case being land and all of the input costs of building a residence, whether it be a condominium or a large scale housing development. And at the end of the day, the consumer is ultimately the one who's buying to live in it or to rent it, that investor. And we're making our money on the margin. And that's how our investors multiply their wealth.
How do you think about time horizon and investment return? And I know, I'm sure there's 12,000 compliance reasons why you can't be super specific and nothing is guaranteed because the past doesn't foreshadow the future and all that. But with a traditional mutual fund in Canadian equities, we have some framework for what that could equal over the course of a 5 to 10 year time horizon. Is there a way to provide a comparable based on your history with your investments?
Yeah, of course. So historically, our performance is, again, you know, to all with all of the disclaimers that are there, has been tracking to kind of a 20% annualized return. And that's kind of our target for the investments that we make. So net of all of the associated sort of profit splits and fees, investors would make a net 20% per annum. It's not paid out annually, because if you think about what we're doing is we're buying a piece of land, we're putting a hole in the ground, we're building something. And at the end of the day, we realize our profit when people ultimately move in and we close on those units. So it equates to about a 20% annualized return. The time frame can vary depending on what phase of the development we get ourselves involved in. For example, if we buy a property that's approved and ready to go with all of the permits in place, and we're participating mainly in the construction, the sales and construction of that building, that could be a 4-year project time horizon. In other instances where we get involved buying what I call raw land, so land that's already entitled, but there's still a lot of zoning that needs to be done and other planning work, design, and so on and so forth, that process can take anywhere between 5 and 7 years. So all of our investors will know at the onset for each project what our forecasted timelines are and what the expected rates of return are.
You can buy a unit of a mutual fund for a very small amount. I mean, $500 and you're in the game. What does it take to be a qualified investor for these investments, for what you're dealing?
Right. So we tend to keep our minimums low relative to most private equity vehicles. So not like a mutual fund where you can buy it for $500, but our minimums are around $25,000. In terms of the qualification of an investor, our product is geared specifically mostly towards, I'd say, accredited investors. So there's a, you know, regulatory definition of that, but it's for people that generally have, you know, a certain amount of financial wealth already in place. We also can accept a category of investor called eligible investor. So that pretty much covers everybody. And we just have to be very careful about, you know, concentration limits and liquidity and things like that. But our team is equipped to be able to work with people to determine the right strategy and the right level of investment for our product.
How do you achieve diversification? So if I did buy that rental property, I'd have one rental property and there could be a whole bunch of issues that could befall that investment. How do you handle diversification for your investors?
That's a great question. So there's really multiple ways. We invest in a variety of different types of development. So as you can imagine, for those of your listeners that are in the Toronto area, for example, or Southern Ontario, you know, a townhouse development is going to have very different characteristics than a condo development in the middle of Toronto. So we achieve diversification both by what we call product type. So single family housing, multifamily housing, condominium, and so forth. We achieve diversification through geography. So we invest throughout Southern Ontario, as well as in multiple markets in the United States. And we achieve diversification through operators. So in all of our investments, we make the investment with an execution partner who's a large-scale developer. And we work with about 10 different large-scale developers, all of whom would be household names for those that are paying attention to this industry. So there's multiple levels of diversification. And then we always try to encourage people. Typically, when people hear about us, they might see a specific project and say, wow, I really want to invest in that project. We try to encourage people, sure, you can invest in that project, but let's take whatever quantum is appropriate for you and put it into 4, 5, 6 different projects so that you can achieve diversification across all of those different areas.
With traditional equity investing, we know there are risks. There's stock market risk, there's interest rate risk, stuff a company inside of a fund can blow up. What are some of the risks that you would want investors to be aware of before they invested with you?
In our product, I mean, like anything in private equity, there's risk in different ways. I would characterize the two largest as illiquidity being one of them, because if one of the things you're doing, you have a forecasted timeline to your housing development or condo development, but there can be delays. There can be delays either in the planning and approvals process. There could be delays in the construction process and so on and so forth. So what we try to do is really have people understand that this isn't a liquid product. So you have to be comfortable with that. And then I think that the second thing, if I could characterize it, is just, you know, in terms of your operators, right? Like, I mean, I think the biggest thing, whether you're investing in equities, whether you're investing in bonds, whether you're investing in a product like ours, it's really doing your diligence in who the execution is. Because a business plan is one thing, a strategy is another thing. How you execute that and how competent your execution is, I would say is the single largest risk that people should really assess.
Where some people will have some skepticism, and certainly I have some skepticism based on what I knew growing up in the 80s about some of the real estate oriented schemes that were around in that time. Other people have been subjected to timeshares, which I know is not at all what you're talking about. It just involves real estate in a very, very different way. As you try and discern between what you do and the integrity and the credibility of it and other scam type things that are in the broad real estate world, how would you help people distinguish between the two? What are the warning signs or the red flags over here that you'd say, hey, wait, we're not like that. That's not what we do.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. At the corporate level, you know, we're a registrant of the Ontario Securities Commission, as well as every other securities commission across Canada, and we're a registrant in good standing. So, you know, we adhere to all of the different securities laws. We have a very robust compliance framework. I think that's a very important thing. So a lot of times when somebody's, you know, showing you a presentation, if they don't have all of the documentation, a full offering memorandum, and open the kimono, so to speak, to use a cliche, in terms of diligence, whatever it takes, come visit the office, talk to people, do your diligence, look on the internet. So the credibility of the organization, I think, is one thing. And then the second thing is with regard to the strategy, this is something that might not, as you pointed out, it's not the most mainstream strategy. But if you think about, you know, the amount of development, for example, in Southern Ontario that's taken place, there's been a lot of wealth that's been created through that process. And frankly, you know, for most investors, it's just a question of awareness. It's about learning and understanding all of the different things out there. And zeroing in on quality means doing your work, doing the diligence, asking for the track record, you know, doing your research. And it all comes back to that. It all comes back to execution.
How do you get paid? Canadian investors are quite used to looking at the management expense ratio on a mutual fund. Those people who know about hedge funds might know 2 and 20. How do you get paid?
Yeah, so 2 and 20, you mentioned 2 and 20. It's a typical private equity structure. In terms of quantum of fee-based compensation, it's about the same. It's structured differently because of the way a development is equitized at the beginning and how it all works. But generally speaking, we make our money in two ways. There's a sort of a base management fee that's taken throughout the course of the project. And it's usually somewhere between 1.5% and 2% over the duration of the project. And then we make 10% of the profit. So no profit, no compensation. It's a success-based compensation on the back end. And that's where we make the majority of our, we always think of our fee structure as keep the lights on and make sure you have the infrastructure to be able to do the job. And really, you're making your money with the success of your investors.
For a qualified investor who has the assets to make this work, where does it make most sense in terms of their broader portfolio? RRSP, non-registered account, inside of a corp? What guidance would you have on that front?
Yeah, to me, it's a pretty simple one. RRSPs are a good one simply because duration and illiquidity being two of the sort of larger risks in our strategy. In an RRSP, for most people, depending on what your age you're investing and what your investment objectives are, that's less of a factor if you're not accessing that cash or using it for something, right? Except for retirement, right? So as long as you're planning appropriately. The second place I think is definitely within a corporation. What we do is considered by tax authorities to be engaging in the business of development. So the benefit to that is it's considered active business income, the return, and therefore it is treated as such within a corporation. So you have the ability to offset and defer because we're a limited partnership structure. So it gives you, you know, if you think about what we're doing is on day one, you're buying something, you're spending a bunch of money to build it, sell it, and design it, and then you're getting the revenue recognition at the end. We flow through those losses. It gives people a tax deferral. So for example, physicians and people that have professional corporations, they can offset some of their interim income that's then recaptured, but it's a nice strategy. So I would say RRSPs and corporations are the two most beneficial ways to invest.
Really interesting stuff. Sasha, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Sasha Chuchu's CEO of Greybrook, and the topic of our conversation was investing in real estate in a way that doesn't require you have a plumbing wrench.